It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why I want to talk about politics for like 3 minutes, just for some organizational reasons, informative reasons. Okay. But then I don't think we should talk about it anymore, because fuck that.
What?
No, I was saying, I have a thing, I'm not even really sure how it came about, but it involved some friends of Trish who had a tradition. I always wear this shirt on Thursday if this shirt is clean, because it's Purple Thursday.
Mm.
And so I realized recently that pretty much means you almost always only see me in this shirt.
I didn't even think about that. I've got two shirts like this that are similar. They're not the same.
That's why I'm not as sure, because I'm like, does the other one not have the stripes? Because I think the stripes seem new.
It doesn't.
The hat, definitely, for a long time it was the Star Wars myth hat,
mm-hmm.
and now it's been this one for a while.
Yep.
So I feel like it's a season thing.
I'll switch it up.
So once winter really hits, we'll do something different.
I don't know.
The changing of the hats.
Depends on my mood.
Sunrise, sunset. Sunrise, sunset.
Okay.
Swiftly go the day. See, this is one of those things. I chickened out just now, but I feel like if I had gone long enough, it would have gotten funny again. But I chickened out in the not funny part, and I'm a little ashamed about that.
All
right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that was not meant to be heard by other living beings until long after humanity had gone extinct. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 297.
All right, stand down. You don't have to take the shot. He remembered this time. You don't need to know what that was about. You're fine.
Well, I'm glad that I remembered, because I don't think I was worried about the shot. I think I was worried about the little laser pointer and one of your cats attacking me.
That's what I meant. That's,
before sorry, the shot was even taken.
I have a cat nearby. I love that there's a visual point. I keep looking up there, which is literally the only space where nothing is.
Yeah.
No, I have one cat who is holding the laser pointer in their paws, and I have another cat who is aiming that cat.
Okay.
Like a gun.
I'm going to pounce on the laser.
And the point, one that you see wandering around is the one ready for it. So any second now. But no, you remembered, so seriously, you're fine.
Kitties, remembered.
You relax. Okay, let me get out of the way. For those of you just joining us, here's how it works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, little topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its erstwhile servants, draw those cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
At random.
Except for the part in for the first 40 minutes where we just sure. talk about shit.
But we don't. It is random, so if you write in, it might be months before.
Or it might be the very next episode.
Yeah, it's not. We don't plan what we...
He's eating your shoe.
Yeah, that's the wrong one. It's this one that he usually... Oh, wow.
He's been very playful recently.
Okay.
He's doing good, though. I realize that everybody in the house, humans and cats, don't think of him as new anymore. Well, he just is part of the family now.
That's good.
And when he's sweet, he's really sweet. But when he's not, he's the bullet I use to wipe you out. If you can't remember the episode number. So, okay, real quick stuff on politics. Just want to do brief recap. Everything still sucks. In some ways worse, but whatever. My big thing is still, I love you. I'm sorry this is happening. I love you. And also, we have to be vigilant. To that end, a couple things I want to do. First, I want to say you should follow on Twitter, if you are on Twitter, Operation Ferris Wheel, which is at Op Ferris Wheel. They are an account that has come up just for this, and they intend to track news and stories of issues involving hate crimes and prejudice during the Trump presidency, specifically. But, I mean, then they've already started, because they've already started. So that is a very useful tool. Through them, I also discovered at Hate Watch, terribly named, but I understand it. It's a group just in general dedicated to reporting on acts of prejudice. It's not specific to Trump. It's not specific to the U.S. It's just everybody. But I still think it's a useful one to know in general. And right now, by which I mean the next 4 years, I think it could be a good one.
I tweeted today.
No way! How did I not see this?
I don't know. I tweeted at somebody. Does that matter?
Possibly. Did you put anything before their name, their handle?
Before it?
Yeah, did the tweet start with their handle?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, then no, only they would have seen it. I mean, I think I could have found it, but it wouldn't have shown up in my feed.
Okay. I wonder if...
Did you get any response?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't, like, log back. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to... Because now that you've said what you just said, and given the fact that I did... Okay. The first time I ever got on Twitter, it was, like, really new. We were working in Applied Systems, and a mutual friend of ours, Mick Hitch, was teaching a class on it somewhere, I don't know, and he said, hey, I'm going to be demonstrating Twitter, and I, you know, why don't you sign up so I can use...
Can tweet to you.
Yeah. And that was the only thing I had, like, if you went to my Twitter account, that's all you would see was that very first tweet, like, gosh, it's got to be... 10 years ago or something now.
Probably.
But anyway.
It's been several years since you started following me.
So this is the first tweet I've ever done since then.
That's not in a classroom situation.
Yeah, and I'm wondering...
First live tweet.
I wonder if I'm going to keep doing that as a way to, you know, keep up to date with things that are happening, because that seems to be the way people keep up to date with things that are happening.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. I think that's a good idea. But here's... I have gone back and forth on Twitter for a long time, and I recently have decided that I highly recommend Twitter to anyone who even thinks that kind of idea would be cool for them, because it is now at the point, and it is built, unlike with Facebook, it is built in such a way that I honestly believe you can tailor your Twitter feed to whatever you want it to be. You could tailor your Twitter feed to just stuff about books. You could tailor your Twitter feed to just pornographic pictures. You could tailor your Twitter feed to just pictures of adorable baby animals. In fact, I'm on my way to doing that. Just about anime. Just about any particular thing. For any interest or academic school out there, there are tons and tons of Twitter accounts. And you get to pick what you follow, and you basically just see their stuff. So you can tailor it, and in this case, you can tailor it to sources that you believe will give you relevant and accurate information. So it can definitely be a good tool that way.
Well, I tweeted to the Hamilton electors. Have you heard about them?
I have not.
All right, well, there are a couple electors to the Electoral College, specifically...
You say elector the way that... people on realty ads say realtor.
Okay.
Correct. The rest of them say a realtor.
They're
or elector.
They're Democrat electors. And they have a plan. They are going to go, they want to go to the Republican electors, which are most of them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And
call them the Burr electors.
Suggest they're going to somewhat try to conspire with them to say, look, we know that we could never persuade you to cast a vote for Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College instead. But what if we could persuade you to cast a vote for a more moderate Republican? And we'll be okay with that. If we could all agree on a moderate Republican, and we could vote for that person instead, and we could achieve one of two things. Either we could outright elect a moderate Republican as president, or failing that, we could defeat Donald Trump's run and send it to the House for a vote, but now the House will have three candidates to choose from, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and a moderate Republican, with the hope that the Republican Congress would prefer the moderate Republican and vote for them instead.
Wow. I know what the next season of House of Cards is going to be. Gee, bus.
So, what I tweeted
that
was...
That is some espionage movie-level shit there.
You think so?
I do. When I think about what would have to happen behind closed doors, who would have to agree to what for what, yes. No, the concept is very simple. Well, okay, maybe I should start by saying this. Among whatever else I have to say about it, I never think that... I think that will never happen. I would guarantee that could never happen.
Well, If I were to bet, if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would bet that this isn't going to work. However, it is. It's perfectly in keeping with both the letter and spirit of the Constitution, and I would be thrilled if it worked.
I know why you would be thrilled also. I mean, I know a reason that you don't know why you would be thrilled.
And what reason is that?
Because, you're going to love this one, the main thing causing all the shit that causes me to say it could never happen, two-party system. The entire thing is based around that all of these people have to be on their team, and so you have to make wheels and deals, and you know, and they're such huge, two huge teams, so yeah, these Republicans like it, but these Republicans owe these Republicans, and these Republicans don't like it. Mm-hmm. But if we can give them this, and oh, and if we could involve those people, that would be awesome, but they're not Republicans, so we can't.
Yeah, you make an excellent point.
And in a version of the country where that works, it's a much more fluid, potentially multi-party system that could actually just negotiate on the issue at hand.
Right. Well, what I tweeted was...
Fuck you guys.
No.
No, wait, sorry, you liked it. Good luck.
Well, but no, what I tweet... Because one goal they have in this, too, is...
Do they sing?
No, this is about... They're also looking for a solution that not only will defeat Trump, but in a broader sense will unify the country. Like, this is going to be an example of Democrats and Republicans working together for a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I tweeted was, if unity is what is your goal here, then why not for the candidate you're suggesting, why not make it a moderate Republican who's also a woman of color? Because they exist. And so that's my contribution, is to say, because they don't know who they want to pick yet. They don't know who they want to put forward as that moderate Republican. And I will pick a woman of color who's also a moderate Republican, of which there aren't a ton of them, but there's more than one, and they could pick any of them. And I think that it would be unifying in terms of it being a moderate Republican and unifying in terms of it being a woman of color. And I think that would be a huge triumph for the Constitution, for the American people, for a strike against the racism and misogyny. That
I was going to say the white nationalist base that has this would...
That undercut this whole thing.
Well, and they would flip out. I mean, there would be... This would come up as a reasoning for a lot of future things they did.
But the thing is, it would be difficult for anybody but that small group of radicals to object to. Because the Republicans are still getting a candidate they'd probably like more, Even the Republicans that wouldn't normally like a moderate Republican candidate are going to like this person more than Trump. And of course, the Democrats would prefer this over Trump. So who would possibly object to it except this small group of radicals who would basically expose themselves for the bigots that they are? And I mean, that's all that would really... It just seems like an elegant solution. Now, there are some people, I think, who would object and say, look, I don't like Trump either, but this you know, this contradicts the spirit of democracy or whatever, but to which I would answer, presidents have never been democratically elected, ever. This wouldn't be the first time that happened. It's kind of an illusion that people have that presidents are democratically elected, and in my view, as you know, I don't think they should be democratically elected. I think the Electoral College is exactly how it should happen, but there are some people who would object to it. Well, and of course, there are. I saw an interview on Fox News with the two Democrat electors and a Fox News guy, and he was, of course, objecting to it all over the place. And how undemocratic it would be, like, what a hypocrite you are. If the tables were turned, you'd be completely arguing the other direction. I mean, he was such a jerk. But, I mean, I think it's a brilliant idea. And so I was moved to tweet for the first time in a decade, probably. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll keep doing it. I don't know.
Nobody's ever going to respond, unless they're way smaller scale, I promise.
Well, the thing is that they're not...
Sometimes, but they have to catch you. You have to catch them at the right time.
Right, well, they're not being followed. I mean, they've only got like 300 or so followers the way it is. So I think the odds that they actually saw it is pretty good. I don't care if they respond. What I care about is that if they weren't thinking that, if it didn't occur to them that maybe they should look for a woman or a woman of color as their candidate, then maybe they'd go, oh, hey, you know what? That's a good idea.
Two things about this. One, at this point, I'm not outright denying it either, but I am no longer as confident as I was that the white nationalist prejudice group is a small fringe element, both in terms of the people who run the government and the citizenry of the nation. Mm. So I do worry about that, which totally reminds me of why I said I just wanted to talk about politics for like 2 or 3 minutes for organizational stuff. Because now I'm super bummed out again.
Oh, sorry.
So sorry, guys. Did not mean for this to happen. I guess we were doing 2 episodes tonight, so I'll save the rest of the politics stuff for the next one. And it's just a quick discussion of some organizations that we should probably all pay attention to / give money to.
Okay. Well, what about your week? You want to talk about that?
My week. I finally, well, on the one hand, didn't get back to the gym. So far, still not doing it this week either. But did get back to the book.
Oh, good.
Just a little bit, but as I discovered before, if I can, you know, like, each evening sort of before bed kind of thing or whatever, get a little bit, like a chapter done, then it becomes very regular and I get into it and I start remembering it better and it's easier each time. So I'm trying to do that. So I've done some couple days in a row now. Wasn't that interesting. I got further than I thought because, to my surprise, more of the chunk I was doing, I just copied and pasted. More of it was just fine for the rewrite than I expected in this section. Because this section is very exposition heavy and rules have changed and things in terms of mythology and plot and stuff like that. So I did have to correct a few spots, but not too much. And the rest of it helped. I kind of thought, I'm like, maybe I need more detail, but I'm like, no, this is pretty where it is.
Good.
We are creeping closer to the stuff where I'm just going to be rewriting whole, like, I'm going to be writing subplots that don't exist at all and go through multiple chapters and stuff like that. So it's going to get harder again real soon, but still progressing, which is the important part.
Very good.
So Atlanta, I talked about that TV show before.
Mm-hmm.
It finished its season a few weeks ago, but we're just going through the last few episodes now. And I again want to recommend it to people. It's a great show. It's getting funnier, I think, but it always was funny. Now there's a few things now that I suddenly remember Donald Glover was a writer on 30 Rock for like 3 seasons.
Oh, was he?
Yes. I mean, there were a ton of writers, but he was on that team.
He's going to be Lando Calrissian in the
Han Solo, yes,
prequel movie.
I bet he's losing his mind over that. but there are a few things, because that's the thing. The show is really tight, and it really runs that line of where's the satire, because mm-hmm. it feels very real in some places, and then other places it's very clearly silly to the point of being fantastical. And that just came up recently. And he's doing really experimental shit where, like, we had a whole episode that was entirely from a local Atlanta TV station. Like, a fake. But, like, we had a fake commercial and a TV show. And then the TV show went to break. Basically, the episode was the TV show. And they had real commercials in between the fake commercials. But the reason we did this, or the connection to the rest of it, is it was a Charlie Rose type conversation show, mm-hmm. But a local one, and one of the people there to discuss was one of the main characters from the show.
Okay,
not Donald Glover's character though, and he was a guest on the show, and that was literally the only connection, which was a good one. But like, we didn't have a before or after where we saw other characters or any setup or anything. This was the whole show. And then the most recent one, I don't even want to spoil, but the most recent one has some weird shit in it that I'm like, is new levels of, okay, this show is really in a different direction than I thought, but it's just so solid and smart. So I again, highly recommend it, and it's done now. If you have FX, I believe you can get their app, and it's free, and you can watch on-demand stuff that way. Hmm. It's probably also sitting on, if you have like Mediacom Digital Cable, it's probably on demand for FX also. So check that out. And then I saw a movie that I got to talk about, which is bad because it's not a good movie and it's not one that I really recommend. But I'm developing over the last couple, I saw it last night and I've developed a little bit of an obsession about it. So maybe it is worth seeing, I don't know. It's on Netflix, so go nuts. This movie, well, okay, and this movie, the reason I have to talk about this is there's a story here to me learning of this movie, what I thought, me watching this movie, stuff like that. So, quite a while ago, Trish sends me an article for a movie that is just about to release on, I think, just on Netflix. I think it came out there first, called Hush.
Okay.
You hear of this movie?
No.
Okay. It's not based on the Batman comic. It is a thriller slash horror, and it is essentially like scary intruder in a house where a woman's by herself, but woman in question is completely deaf and mute.
That sounds really familiar, but that's new?
Well, there's been versions of this kind of thing. In fact, there was a great one with Audrey Hepburn years ago, but she was blind. Mm. But there's a classic movie. I think it's Something About a Stranger. I don't know. But it's a similar thing there.
Okay.
Well, no, because I think this is, it's probably been like a year ago now that this came out.
Okay. Originally.
But
maybe I did hear of it then.
And the article is an interview with the filmmaker, and it's really intriguing because, like, to match with this, apparently large amounts of the film just silent. Which I'm like, which, you know, builds attention like crazy. Mm. And that's taking this whole idea, if it's about this different perspective, I don't want to say translated, but, you know, a very different way you're perceiving stuff when you've completely lost one sense and can't speak, presents a lot of potential. I mean, by definition, it's not very action-heavy because the point, a lot of it is going to be that she can't hear and doesn't know the person is there. There's nobody, you have to, in order to make this premise work, she has to be alone. So there's not, like, other people involved. So a lot of the tension is just nothing happening and you waiting for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that would be really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so did Trish. And Trish is normally, you know, and I said, this could be scary. And she's like, I'm fine with thrillers, you know. It's not horror. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we saw it. Mm-hmm. the movie's probably fine. In for what it is, for what I just described, what I thought it was, it's the worst thing ever. What the movie is an absolute bog standard home invasion horror film with a little twist that the woman's deaf. So that makes for, like, new complications in the cat and mouse game that we're playing.
Sure.
But there's plenty of dialogue. It's never silent. There's background music and stuff like that. The murderer and the potential victim both make just the worst decisions. And don't get me wrong, horror movies do that all the time.
Yeah.
But, first of all, frequently there's other stuff to distract you. And that's the thing, this didn't have the high tension because we were running around doing crap and we could all, I always had music and stuff, so I still didn't lose that I'm in a movie vibe, you know?
Right.
Which I thought the silence would do. I honestly don't know, but that was the thing. I thought it was intriguing, experimental. We would just have silence for the sections where she would have silence.
Yeah.
And in fact, even the times where they sort of represented that, we could still hear the blood rushing in her ears.
Mm.
So that was dumb. But, yeah, it had none of that stuff, and it had a very small cast. So then I just got to judge it on what it is. And first, I hate that genre. I don't want that. We've talked before about, you know, I don't like watching horror movies that are just super plausible.
Right.
And I knew going in that would be a thing here, but, I mean, this was just like watching, you know, Last House on the Left, or whatever.
Yeah.
Just shitty for that. But, yeah, but it didn't... I was expecting something really interesting, and it was not. It also has the guy who played Sam somebody in Battlestar Galactica in it, and I feel so bad for him being in it, because I like him.
Hmm.
And this is not... That being said, the production values were pretty good, and it was shot well.
Hmm.
There were a couple of times where they used CGI. It wasn't great CGI. And at least one of them, I was of the opinion, I'm like, I can think of the way to do that practically, and it would have looked better, and it would have been plenty cheap. So, I will that. But it is shot okay. I mean, it's acted fine, but it's not that. So if any of you were ever intrigued by that idea, because we always talk about, like, we should watch it. And then last night, she's like, hey, you want to watch Hush? And I was like, okay, let's do it. Not so much.
No, that's too bad.
So, that's mostly it. Playing Assassin's Creed Unity, moving along in that. We gamed this week, but we didn't do a lot. I think gaming was kind of a silly time.
I went to Corridor Con.
Oh, yes, yes. Since how was that?
Time. Good. Just like good as last time.
What'd you play?
Okay, let's see. One of the things we did was that that GM boot camp thing again, where we did Lady Blackbird.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was something we'd done before.
I've never actually played Lady Blackbird. I want to play Lady Blackbird.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't... Since we were doing it for this GM boot camp, which is people who've never GM'd before get a chance to kind of do it on the fly, it's hard to tell. I mean, it might be played different by a person who knows the game and is experienced with it and was running it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I can say I really have played the game.
Yeah. That it's one of those that though is built a one shot.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like there's not a game per se, there's this one play.
That's true.
Now I'm sure people could expand from there, but it doesn't come it comes as here's an adventure to play and here's the system and here's exactly as much background information as you need for this adventure, nothing else.
But it was fun. Mark's wife GM'd it, first time she ever GM'd it, she did a great job. So that was fun.
She never GM'd, because she used to be, I used to be in a gaming group with her.
Yeah, well.
And Mark.
The first time Mark ever GM'd was a few weeks ago when he tried the same game.
Yeah, I guess when we played before, it was a guy named Brian who I hadn't known before that, and then Dan, I guess that was it.
I played a couple games that Dave created and was testing. One was a game, it was like one of those sort of serious kind of emotional games, you know, but it was about solitary confinement, like in prisons and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very interesting, very very well put together game, and it was fascinating to play that. But we also played the other game from him. Now I'm going to have to try to remember, because I think it was the very first thing we played. Oh, yeah, it's kind of set in a, kind of imagine if in sometime in the Roman period, there was like almost an apocalypse that sort of locked things into that world, and it was an apocalypse brought on by gods and whatnot. So there's magic and there's gods, but everything's kind of stuck in this age of antiquity. And what you play is there's a town, and it's the administrator over it is a senator, a regional governor, or whatever, and it's a district actually, and the district you're in is cursed in some way, and you work out how it's cursed. Mm-hmm. In our case, the ground was cursed so that you couldn't grow anything in it. Used to be the district used to be a big agricultural district, and now you can't grow anything there. And in response to the curse, the senator or regional governor or whatever can summon these creatures that are called laws, and they are formerly humans who were killed through some act of injustice. Okay. And they come back as these creatures. No, everybody knows that they're people, humans who were killed by injustice, but they don't recognize them.
So you don't know which human it was.
That's right.
Okay.
But in the course of the game, there might be interactions that reveal it, and that's an added complication and whatever. And as we worked it out, we were all members of a family whose house was burned down while we were still in it, and so on and so forth. And so we chose the characteristics each of our little creatures would have, and over the course of the game, certain interactions revealed who some people were, but not others. And we worked out how to reverse the curse. That was our mission. And it was a very interesting game. Dave's really good at putting these things together.
Did he make this game, or is this...
No, this is one that he was playtesting it. I guess, I don't know if I asked him specifically, but I think it was his.
This is his? Oh, wow.
This would be the third game, maybe more, because, I mean, he's playtested things before that I'm not sure if I realized what the origin of it was.
Yeah,
he was playtesting
it
for someone else.
That's true, yeah, he'll do that sometimes.
But this is the third game that I know of that he has created that I've played, because there was... the one I mentioned about the solitary confinement, there was the one I was just talking about, and there was that one I talked about previously on the podcast that had to do with 19th century London and paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
And they're all good. He's really good at creating these games.
I have play tested, I think, two games. I get confused because I have edited the rules of his games.
Hmm.
For a bunch of others. And so I'm like, which ones did I play?
Yeah,
and which
yeah.
ones did I just read about? Because I was going to say I playtested one called Coyotes, but I don't believe I actually playtested it. I think I read through it, and I think he and I discussed it heavily.
Hmm.
But I don't think I've ever actually played it. But then there's like a different one. I don't even remember which one what that game was called, that Trish and I went up, and then Robin and David and I played that one.
Now the first one we playtested was like a lot of role playing game. It was fun, and you kind of joked around. The solitary confinement one was, like I said, there are those games out there that are kind of serious, that are kind of meant to take you to a certain emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really well done, and it really was effective in doing that. He's just really good at coming up with this stuff.
Well, he's a great game creator, but he's also the best GM.
Oh, running them, yeah.
Like,
yeah, very
man
good.
Can yes hand like I don't even understand. It actually kind of pisses me off because I try and do that and I can't do that in mine. And I've read the books he suggested when I said, "Dude, you're pissing me off. How can I be more like you?" Didn't help.
Well, the whole group
actually
of them
did help, but I'm still worse.
In Corridor Games on Demand, they're all very good at it. I mean, Dave's very good at it. I think they're all good at it. The fourth game we played. was based on a system called Praxis. Does that sound right? Have you heard of that?
That is the name of a system.
Okay.
I know almost nothing
so
about it.
So it was a Praxis system, and we had three different settings or whatever we could choose from, and we chose to do what was described to us as kind of an existential hellish like prison.
Okay.
and there were very unusual characters that you got character sheets for, and one of them was the Piper, which so I played. Another one was the fireman, Mule Skinner, I think it was.
Yep, no, he stole it. This is just West Hollywood.
Well, anyway,
thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
It was very bizarre.
Credit probably goes to Jay Leno. I don't know.
It was a very bizarre game that that I'm not sure everybody enjoyed very much, but I played the Piper and I.
Well, yeah, if you're the Piper, if you're the dude who gets stuck being the Mule Skinner, it's a rough time.
Yeah, my wife played that character.
I don't want to be the Mule Skinner. Shut up and skin that mule.
Well, but I played the Piper very much as a trickster character, so, I mean, it was just having a good time the whole
time.
Did
you pipe?
I didn't have a pipe, no.
No.
But the Piper piped, I guess, in the context of the game.
Yeah, sure. That's what I mean. Yeah. Did your character actually pipe?
Yeah, a little bit. Right.
Did your wife's character actually skin a mule?
Yes.
Nice!
In the context of the game, sure.
What, were there any characters named Dog Welder?
No.
My favorite superhero.
But I had a good time with it. It was fun for me, but I could see very easily that it wasn't fun for everybody. I think just about everyone but myself. Well, and Dave had a pretty good time with his character, too, because he was the... I forget what the character was named, a bleeder or something? Like, you know, like someone who would use leeches to bleed somebody, mm-hmm. character like that. And I think he had a lot of fun with his character, and I had a lot of fun with mine, but I think everybody else was not that thrilled with this weird kind of hellscape existential prison thing. But I thought it was pretty fun.
How did the mule skinning come up, like, organically in the story?
Well, it's kind of hard to describe. I mean, I'm naming these characters, but the setting itself is just sort of... It's just bizarre. Like the fireman's job is to make sure no fires start, but this is a place where no fires start.
Okay.
The mule skinner's job, you know, is to provide, like, leather and food, really, for people through slaughtering mules, but it's like...
Okay.
What's the point of that, you know?
Okay.
It's kind of just this bizarre thing, and you're just supposed to sort of make stuff up as you go along
when you describe the job as more... It's the name, because mule skinner sounds very exotic and specific to me. I'm like...
Okay, well, I don't...
Why are we using the mules?
Yeah, yeah.
Also, why only the skin? What's going on here?
But this is what I'm saying.
And I'm like, so there's a lot of mule skin needs?
I mean, you get these character sheets, and they give you scant information about your character and what they do and what they're like and the environment, and you kind of... You're kind of building it from just that scant information.
So
what we came up with and what we assumed this world was and how it worked and what people did is going to be entirely different than what someone else does.
Yes. And Piper, even stuff like Bleeder, things like that, these are archetypes. Like, I get the idea there. And if you'd said, like, leather worker, butcher, cattleman, you know, whatever you are, animal handler, okay, fine. Again, mule skinner. Awesome name. Nothing against that. Raises a whole lot of questions.
Well, though. I think maybe it's
so
supposed to.
Like,
I don't know.
Like again, as I say, why the mule? And why you only want to skin? So, I mean, that's why I'm so focused on that. And I understand that's not the point. I'm just saying, that's my favorite part.
Well, and then there was someone who was
mule
in the
skinner might be the name of the
tower
section.
Watching. Oh, another thing was
unless you get a better one,
a black monk was supposed to come and judge people.
I'm always uncomfortable with that term.
And then
black
leave.
Monk.
I mean, I don't know. I can't remember everything about it, but it's just one of those things where you just get a tiny bit of information, and everyone's kind of trying to come up with some kind of coherent thing from it. And again,
I
had a I had a great time with my character, but I had a very easy character to have a great time with, so.
A lot of games that David will bring to you in
whatever
form. Well,
David didn't bring this game. Someone else did.
Yes. I think that this one is by association, Dave.
Well, he played this game with us, so he had a character, too, that he had a great time with.
I still consider him indirectly responsible for this. The game's within Dave's orbit, and he listens to this, so I'm going to choose my words very carefully. That motherfucker. No. The games that tend to make it into Dave's orbit often are of a very specific, very, I hesitate to say experimental, but that might be the right word, type. In terms of mechanics and the soul of the game, really. The reason for playing. Like, there are some games that are very easy to approach from a lot of different motivations for why one would roleplay. You know, I've talked before, the narrativist game is simulationist. Yeah. There's some games that's like, you know, this game is well-rounded. It's not the best at any of these, but people can play it and get what they want out of it that way. And then there are games that, like, this is for this kind of experience. And the problem is, unless that's crystal clear, some people just don't get it, and so they come into a game. Sometimes, if they'd known that's the kind of game it is, they wouldn't want to play. And other times, if they'd known that was the kind of game it was, they'd click into the right mindset for it.
That's right. The perfect example of that is one of the first games we ever played with Dave was The Final Year.
Yes.
And when we played it, it was just a laugh riot. But that's not typically how it's played.
Yes.
Now, that's a good example of one. If I'd understood what it was really supposed to be about, I would have still wanted to play it, but like you said, I would have clicked into a different mode,
yes.
And I would have played it differently.
And the good news is you play with David long enough, you figure this out, because he has a type, so to speak. And I would say he goes for narrativist, but it's not accurate. He goes for very meta games. They are frequently, I would almost say, educational, but they, I feel like they really get to the heart of narrativism. He's going to be mad because I think he doesn't like to say that they're narrativists, but they really get into what I think of as the mechanics of storytelling in a lot of cases. And he likes to play with delivery vectors. That's his big thing. Like, Dave will bring you games that have a system that you've never heard of before. Dave will bring you the game where instead of rolling dice, you need to find a tree, a black walnut tree that's just about to drop its fruit, and like you smack the tree, and however many falls is. That's a kind of game Dave would love.
Okay, but see, it's also though an interest in a mechanic that contributes to the strength and power of the narrative itself.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's not just. Because a lot of games, and I don't think my wife and I have yet to play a pencil and paper, just straight up role-playing game.
Yeah.
Every role-playing game we've played so far, introduced by these guys, is all about, you know, we don't want a game where the mechanic takes you out of the narrative. Mm-hmm, we want a game where the mechanic sort of keeps you in it.
Yeah.
So, And most of the games that we play are like that, where the mechanic's always going to take you out a little bit, but all of these games seem to be designed for it to take you out as little as possible.
Yeah.
So that's
both
that's
in terms of the statistics, and you know the curve of results,
right?
And frequently thematically as well.
Sure, and also in
Classic example is you're doing a Western game. Your mechanic involves playing cards somehow.
Sure, sure, and also in terms of how often you bring the mechanic in, like even if the mechanic is so well designed to keep you in the narrative, if we can avoid bringing the mechanic in at all, that's even better.
Yes, Dave is very big on minimalist system,
right?
To avoid that kind of dissonance.
So this,
which I appreciate. I have a little gamism in me, and I like ruling things, and looking up the charts a little bit, just a little bit.
This Praxis system makes use of another. We played a kind of game like this before, and the guy who brought this game, the last time I played a game like this, he introduced it too, so he must like this kind of game, where there's a it involves each player. You take turns adding on to the narrative. Like, this person tells a story of what's happening, then this person tells a story of what's happening, and then, and so on, in kind of a turn-taking mode, which is okay. I don't know if I prefer that, but it certainly allows everybody to have to play a part, because a lot of times, if you don't have that, and you don't have people rolling initiative and all that other stuff that kind of organizes the action, some people who aren't the types to just hop in and interrupt don't really get a say, or don't get to play their part. Well,
and the thing that I always get from a lot of these kind of games is frequently they're one shots, and frequently you're playing them at a con or something like that. Yeah. Because, and it's not that these necessarily lend themselves better to a campaign or whatever, but almost always the mechanic is weird to me, is unusual to me. And like the round robin GM kind of thing, I don't like that when it usually, because it usually is awkward and makes the story clunky and stuff like that. But imagine you had a group that you got together with even just once a month and always played that kind of game. Eventually you guys would know what it is. The same way the rest of us, the same way I still marvel at how much Neuroduck has trouble in D&D. She's getting there now, but for the longest time, she listens too, I gotta be careful. She would just be so confused by her own character sheet. And to me, it's like, you're gonna hit the guy. You know your weapon is based off of dex. Roll a d20. You tell him what it is, if it's the armor. Like to me, I just know this stuff, because I've done it forever.
Yeah, right.
But then if we played that a whole bunch, the round thing, okay, he likes to leave on a cliffhanger, so I need to be ready for that to be a thing. Oh, he's going to, I could use that. I think I'm going to, like, we'd get good at it.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. We'd get familiar with the system, and a lot of these systems, if you could just play it a bunch, then you get used to it.
That's true.
And I think a lot of the awkwardness that sometimes results from these is because we're all like, okay, now I smack the table twice and roll the die, and then I tell you what.
Well, the Corridor Con overall was great fun, and we missed you because you went last year, and we played that superhero thing where I had, what did you call it, the worst Iron Man ever, or whatever.
Ghetto Iron Man. No, or maybe it was just sad. I think it was just sad Iron Man. Sad Iron Man. Yeah, because it wasn't that your tech was bad. You just had a poor life. It was just a sad guy. I couldn't make it because partially we just desperately needed this weekend to like do laundry. But I'm kind of glad that, I mean, I was sad not to go because I totally had planned to, and then when scheduling came around. But there's no way in hell after the election, like, I would not have been like, yeah, let's go, gang.
Well, it was a great relief to us.
That would be a good way to hide it. It took me too long to get to where I started distracting myself. I've been doing good at distracting myself since then. I'm watching lots of terrible movies, so yay. But I know, that's the thing. I'm like, it's like I'm back to normal. Wait, is that good? Why? this was the goal? No.
But that was probably it was all great, but I do think that my favorite part was playing the Piper in that game. I as usual, I worry walking away from the game. It's like, wow, I mean, that was a really obnoxious character. Was it too obnoxious? Did it take away the fun from everybody else? But the good thing about it is the game was so turn-based that my character couldn't really interrupt anybody. So, I mean, you know, I might have annoyed somebody, and I hope I didn't, but at least I didn't take anything away from anybody, I don't think.
Standard rules apply here. I find it highly unlikely that you did. I don't feel that's going to be a comfort to you at all, and you will always feel this way after every game, so whatever. And I don't know, maybe you did. But no, I say that up front as a standard disclaimer, because what I'm about to say may make you more worried. It is a definite thing. Because I have had that sitting across from people, almost always, you know, strangers or people I don't game with very often. But it's like, he's kind of being a dick. But I feel like that's his character. And sometimes you don't have that. Sometimes you're like, he is totally being a dick in a super entertaining way. That is awesome role playing. But there's times where I'm like, I think he's trying to just do the character, but it's not fun. And then there's other times that I'm like, he's just using this character as an excuse to be an asshole.
To be a bad person.
And then there's other times that I'm like, I don't think it matters what character he's playing. This guy's just a dick.
Well,
I think it's highly unlikely anyone was thinking thoughts like that about you, but what I want to say is that is a real thing that happens in both situations. You can play an asshole character and people accept it as the character and even enjoy it, or you can play an asshole character and they think you're an asshole. And what's in your favor is that usually the reason for that is you're an asshole, you're not an asshole. So.
Well, and most of the people who were playing know me, so
yeah,
and knew the character I was playing.
And that's going to become more common with you going to the Geek City things and all that. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We should do something out of the hat because we only got like 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But don't worry, the next week will be so much questions, guys. You just have to wait a week.
Coffee wants to know.
Coffee, who tonight is having coffee with her Goyles.
Can you ever learn the truth if you don't fight for it?
I feel like this is a song lyric or something.
Can you ever learn the truth if you don't fight for it? I don't know what that means.
Well, here's what it means.
Okay, good. You can tell me.
The truth is hidden from us. What we think of as the real world is just a thin veil. Elon Musk is looking into this right now.
We're in the Matrix, is that what you're saying?
Elon Musk is literally checking into us being in a simulation. I'm not even making that up. I feel weird about that because I like him. But he's investing serious research dollars into finding out if we're all living in a simulation because he thinks we are.
Oh, he's not the only one.
I know.
I mean, there's some serious scientists who think that.
I know, but he's the only dude I know. Neil deGrasse Tyson might think it too, I don't know. Anyway,
they're wrong.
No, what I'm saying is, no, they're right. That's what was going on. We're in a simulation.
I don't even know how he's going to prove they're wrong.
Run by the Illuminati. But you can find the truth. You just have to fight for it. That is, I'm sad to say, since that clearly was a bit, that is the sum total of insight I have into this question. I guess the answer is no, when nobody is forcefully trying to keep you from said truth, but I have issues with the concept of truth in a lot of ways.
Sure. So. But I, like, what it seems to me, okay, so I started off my life thinking
black child.
That certain things, and factual thing. I mean, like, I'm not talking about truth with a capital T, you know, metaphysical or religious truth. I'm talking about, you know, things that you can test and everyone can agree on, like the boiling point of water at sea level and stuff like that. I mean, actual scientific truth.
I'm still out on that one.
Okay, well, I was...
More tests should be done.
...raised in a world where...
Boiling water gives kids autism.
That was mostly... Those types of truths, those verifiable things, were kind of, they were relatively easy to arrive at. I mean, the only sense that they were hidden might be that they were subtle, and you kind of had to think about it or design a clever experiment to get to it. But I wouldn't consider that fighting for it. It's just thinking about it a little bit more than just a superficial observation. And that these things were things that just about everybody could agree on, and that things about metaphysical things and things beyond that were things that we could discuss and debate, but in a safe, in a place where people could respect one another's opinions. I really had this picture of reality that was like, hey, we can all get along thanks to science, mostly.
Now I'm just seeing you in some sort of black and white film, and you're just a little kid, but your hair's slicked back, and you got the collar.
My first home after I was born was Pleasantville, Iowa.
Of course.
And apparently that is the Pleasantville that they were supposedly basing the film off of, but
I
didn't know.
Wait, so that
town
was in black and white when you lived there?
I guess. All the pictures that I see of it are.
Nice.
1969. I only lived there for 2 months, and then it was somewhere else. But anyway, so, but this
I
is...
I lived in my first town for 2 months.
This is what I believed. Then, when I got to college, it didn't take long for that entire thing to be shattered, and my first year of college was so, I was so depressed. I mean, aside from the fact that I'd broken up with my girlfriend I dated for 3 years, that was just part of it. I was mostly devastated by how upside down and messed up the world was beyond what I ever thought it was.
Kids were just boiling water. Completely
disillusioned.
Different temperatures.
And so that started a completely different... I mean, I thought my quest leaving home was going to be just sort of building off of... And I think I've said this on the podcast before. Building off of this mountain of knowledge and goodwill that humanity had built up and just sort of building on a little bit on top of that for the rest of my life and just having a good old time. And from that point forward...
Did Haley Mills play you in the movie?
From that point forward... As I've said, I realized, oh, the mountain's not quite that. It's a dit. No, it's a hole. It's a gaping pit. I mean, that's the story of my life for the last 20, 30 years. He's realizing just how bad it is.
Turned into the Punisher origin story.
But I've also realized that, like, so for a while I thought, gosh, I thought people knew certain things and believed certain things and took certain things for granted, and now they don't. But now I'm coming back around to this notion that actually people still do know those things, and even to the point of taking them for granted, but there are a lot of things that they're in denial about for various reasons. Right? Like, now I got to think of a good example.
Boiling point of water.
No.
Sea level.
I got to think of a good example. Like...
That's the end of this Twilight Zone episode, when we finally convince you via intervention that the boiling point of water at sea level is not what you think it is, and you've just been delusional this whole time.
For example, I think there are a lot of people I've met who have...
Damn it, Billy, it's 312
degrees. Who have, like, I don't want to say full-blown racist ideas, but racist ideas. Like, not hateful, like... non-white people are subhuman type of ideas, but more of a non-white people might not be as motivated to work or stuff like that. Things like that, a little more subtle. Yeah, everybody's bad.
White people walk like this.
Everybody's bad, but more subtle. Mm. But as I talk to them, I get the clear impression that they don't really think that. Like, they know that's the stupidest, most ignorant thing that can't possibly match up to reality or any kind of empirical proof. But they don't believe it because they think it's actually, you know, rock bottom true. They believe it because it serves some purpose to comforting their fears or some psychological thing. And so I finally gotten to that point where I realize having rational conversations with some of these people is pointless. And it's not because they don't know it and refuse...
Yet he keeps coming back.
It's not because they don't know it and refuse to know it. It's because they already know it. They're not interested in having a conversation about it. Their belief, the belief that they put forth, and sometimes that the belief they put forth as if it's fact, on some level they know that it's garbage.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. They're trying to... this is a defense mechanism, and so... interacting with them about it is pointless.
And frequently, people do have to fight to learn the truth, and fight that exact thing you're talking about. Fight. Well, and there's versions of it. There's also just the inertia. But yeah, there's the fear and the denial of it. I can read a thing that says something, and I can believe that's true. Or I can work to verify with better sources if that's true. But the accuracy of said sources, for the most part, the degree to which I can trust them, is going to be pretty proportional to the amount of effort I put in.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. That's another good point.
So there is how much... And so there's both the component of maybe I want that to be true. so I'm not going to try as hard. Or the component of maybe I am just too damn lazy, and that sounds good enough, so I'll go with that. And that doesn't mean that I'm internalizing it, necessarily, but the next time you happen to bring up that topic, that's literally the only thing I ever read on it was that damn thing on Facebook, so I'm going to jump in on that. And depending on how that conversation goes, I may either have that view re-emphasized, so now I'm like, well, I have two sources.
Yeah.
Or, if you try and convince me otherwise, that may be the end of it, or you may make me defensive and then I dig my heels in.
But what I'm saying is that most of the people I've run into who get defensive are not getting defensive because, are not really getting defensive because of that piece of information or they like that source or anything else.
No.
They're getting defensive because of a whole different thing that has something to do with their own personal issues.
Yep.
So,
and that's frequently the stereotyping and the generalization is that. And again, it's because you want it to be true, not because you want Asians to be bad drivers.
Right.
I like picking that one because I'm always just like, well, what the hell? But, no, let me finish. That is my first half of that
right,
thought.
Right.
Not because you want Asians to be bad drivers, but because it's simpler and easier to deal with people if you can make those little checkboxes. If you see an Asian and you talk to them or they're in the road or whatever, just be able to say they're bad drivers. It's way easier than to have to interact with them enough to find out if they're a bad driver.
Right, but also you might assert that because you just don't want to, quote-unquote, lose in a, quote-unquote, argument with me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, does that have anything to do with how
if
you feel about Asian?
If I mention that and you come at me in a way that I think means you're implying I'm racist, some people...
Or just wrong.
Very few people would potentially back down from that. Most of us are going to be like, no, I'm so not racist. And the easiest way to prove that to you is to prove to you, by which I mean yell at you a whole lot so you believe, that that is fucking true.
Yeah.
I'm not racist. They're just all terrible drivers.
Yep. Well,
and there's plenty of stuff that shows if people hear something often enough, they're way more likely to believe it true.
Right.
So if I say, like, by the end of this podcast, I may have convinced some people that Asians are bad drivers. I apologize for that. Not accurate.
I guess what all that means to me is that truth, at least, however that we want to define that, my experience with truth is that it's not always self-evident, but it never seems to me to be something that by itself we ever need to fight for. I don't think truth is hiding from us necessarily. I think people... First and foremost, I think people are hiding from themselves, and this creates buried truths that if they're going to get dredged up...
Okay, you said first and foremost, and we're already over time, so I'm going to encourage you to only have like a two things.
It was only two things. Now I'm having a hard time remembering the second thing. Oh, the second thing being that we also end up obscuring truths outside of ourselves because those truths threaten us. And so there are some, so like what you're talking about, where, like political truths, for example, when a politician makes a claim, how do I find out if that claim's true or false? It is extremely hard.
No, you have to do like I do, which is I pick a source and decide I'm just going to believe them.
Right, which is not...
Snopes, potentially PolitiFact,
sure,
stuff
which,
like that.
Which is not entirely satisfactory because those could also be wrong.
They absolutely could be.
So I think truth is artificially made hard by our culture and our politics, but I think that is just a symptom of the fact that our culture makes people bury their own truths, and if people could just be more honest with themselves, I think we'd find truth is not something that we ever have to fight for. Search for, maybe, but we never have to fight for it.
Which is why Oxford English Dictionary's word of the year was post-truth. Because everything sucks.
Yeah.
We gotta go. We're way over late, and next week is like right now for us.
Yep.
So, But once again, a question from Coffee that we really didn't understand what the hell she was talking about elicited some really interesting conversation. So thanks for that, and we'll see you all guys in a few minutes or a week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.